You know, I've told my story a handful of times and a bunch of times in a bunch of different places, and I think, you know, typically what happens is people share their experience, strength, and hope, and I have a good feeling most of you know a lot about how it was, so we can skip over a lot of that. You know, the short synopsis was my sponsor calls it eating like an insane asshole, and I used to spend a lot of my time. I used to spend almost every day eating like an insane asshole, and that is the it's the only way that I can really describe it. One time I looked up, I love numbers and statistics, and one time I looked up how many slices of pizza does the average person have in a year, and the answer to that question is 56. It's a little more than one slice per week, and I said, well, I'm, you know, I hit that quota by like January 20th. And so, you know, I was easily eating 15 times, you know, the average person's, you know, pizza quota. And when I think about that, it's really, pizza is really the perfect analogy for helping me define abstinence. You know, the sheet has a definition of abstinence. The HOW program has a definition of abstinence, that we work a program that, you know, allows us to choose what abstinence is. I've always been a fond believer in it's my best thinking that got me here, so I don't necessarily know if I'm the best person to choose what abstinence is for Tony. So my sponsor's definition of abstinence, which really resonated with me, is, you know, if you can eat it with your hands and it's not a fruit or a vegetable, it's going to be a problem. And that just really, and when I think about when I was eating like an insane asshole, when I think about everything that I would eat, I ate it with my hands. And, you know, I eat pizza with my hands, cheeseburgers, french fries, cookies, donuts, bagels, muffins. I just eat it with my hands, right? And so I guess the only caveat would be, you know, there are some desserts that you would technically not eat with your hands, but, you know, I don't need a fork to consume cake or pie, you know. So, if it's a dessert, you know, if it's on the dessert table, you know, or if I can eat it with my hands and it's not a fruit or a vegetable, it's going to cause me a problem, you know. And knowing what I know about compulsive overeaters, my best guess is it's going to cause most other compulsive overeaters a problem as well. And I feel very passionately about that. You know, and this was, you know, and there was a lot of trial and error here, even like eating sandwiches and realizing, you know, the best part of a sandwich is the bread, you know, and when I thought about the kind of man that I wanted to be and how I wanted to look, there was nobody I knew that looked the way I wanted to look and felt the way that I wanted to feel that ate pizza, cheeseburgers, and bread on a regular basis. That just was not part of their routine. And those people were not compulsive eaters, right? And so still those things were not part of their routine. So it was only logical to me that these things cannot be part of my routine. So having that definition of abstinence of, you know, not having dessert, not eating anything with my hands, it's not a fruit or a vegetable, what becomes available to me is everything else left in the universe, which is a considerable amount of things. You know, and from there, you know, I get to experiment and it with what works to me. And so I think there are kind of two components that I really want to talk about today is one is the two ideas. The first idea is the idea of going to any lengths, which is something I don't think we talk about enough. And the second idea is a sort of recovery 2.0. What is that? Like getting beyond the basics and what that looks like. You know, for the first topic of going to any length, there's a pamphlet, and I don't know if it's on the wall back there, but my sponsor gave me a pamphlet, which I think is the best pamphlet. When I came in, I read all the pamphlets. You know, when I came in, man, I just couldn't stop eating cookies, like as a meal. Right, I couldn't stop getting out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and driving to the grocery store and buying a bunch of candy and donuts and eating in my car and throwing it in the neighbor's trash and pretending like it didn't happen and you know, stealing from the grocery store and that just was not the way I wanted to live one day at a time for the rest of my life. And So when I came in, you know, I didn't believe it was possible. I didn't believe that not eating cookies was possible. And in my very first meeting, there was a girl who talked, and she said she hadn't eaten a candy bar in 3 years. And I couldn't comprehend it with my mind. Like, how is that possible, right? And then, you know, through time, I have come to believe that not only is that possible, but it's also possible for me. And, you know, we're on that road one day at a time. So I do believe that that's possible for everybody who wants it. You know, the pamphlet was called A Commitment to Abstinence. The pamphlet is called A Commitment to Abstinence, and there's the word commitment is really important, and it goes through a whole bunch of different bullet points about being committed to being abstinent and really making that commitment. And you know, for me, it took a long time to be committed. You know, I was kind of half abstinent or trying abstinence or three quarters abstinent, and half measures really do avail us nothing, because you know, there's a 900 pound gorilla, and you know, and every time I try something, every time I eat something with my hands that is not a fruit or a vegetable, I think it's fun, you know, and my sponsor tells me we don't engage in recreational eating, and there's something about eating with my hands that is fun for me, that is comforting for me, and it's just not a behavior that you know, that I need to be engaging in, right? I've never woken up in the night and said, man, I need to eat 5 apples right now. You know, I've never left at lunchtime and said, gosh, I need to go have 6 chicken breasts. That has never happened. You know, gosh, I just wish I could eat some more broccoli. You know, those things are not things that have ever happened. And I think being committed to go to any lengths is really being willing to do whatever it takes. And if that means one needs to make 10 phone calls a day, if that means one needs to go to a meeting morning, noon, and night, and if there's not OA meetings, going to AA meetings, because there's always a million of those, you know, if that means one has to have a food plan and check in with somebody, if that means that you have to, you know, spend the weekend with somebody who's abstinent just to get a couple days under your belt so that you, you know, can do it. You know, I've had times where I've given up my wallet because I couldn't be trusted with my own money, and I've had to give someone else in recovery, you know, my wallet for a day or a couple of days just to not go out and buy something that I shouldn't be buying. And that, you know, is examples to me of going to any lengths and having a plan. And my sponsor tells me often that, you know, if we don't have a plan, then what we're doing is we're planning to fail. And it's so important for me, to know what I'm eating before I go to bed, because the craziest thing that I can do as a compulsive overeater is not know what I'm eating tomorrow. Right, for me to go to bed tonight without knowing what I'm eating tomorrow is kind of crazy, because I don't always make the best choices when left to my own devices, you know. And it is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it doesn't matter how much time I think that I get. There's once in a while there's always this voice that says, hey, maybe just one, or maybe it won't be bad right now. The truth of the matter is, that is insanely delusional thinking for me, because it's never been just one. You know, there's nothing that I can eat with my hands that's not a fruit or a vegetable that I've only ever had one of, or that I've only ever wanted to have one of. Right? If you have one donut or one cookie, we really don't have anything to talk about. Like, it's a non-starter. Now, if you have a tray or a box, now maybe we can begin a conversation, but the idea of one or two just really doesn't. It's just a waste of my time. You know. So when I think about the 900 pound gorilla and I think about entertaining these thoughts, it's like poking the gorilla, or this idea of maybe I ate a pretzel and I didn't go off the rails, right? And so all that does is invite me to poke the gorilla again. And so this idea of the poking the grill is crazy because one always loses. Because eventually that gorilla turns around and it grabs you. And the gorilla loves to dance. And the thing about dancing with the 900-pound gorilla is the dance is not over until the gorilla decides that it's over. And I get no consent when I'm dancing with the gorilla. And that's a problem, because I don't know if that dance is going to last for the afternoon or for the day or the week or the month or the rest of the year. And that is a very, very scary thing. You know, it's been described to me that having a plan, you know, this is different than drugs and alcohol. You know, we can't just put the tiger in the cage and leave it there. You know, three times a day, I got to walk up to the cage. I got to let that tiger out and I got to take it for a walk. Right. And those times are breakfast, lunch and dinner. And it is really important for me that if I'm taking a tiger for a walk, that I have a plan. I need to have a plan. And you know, I've often suggested to folks that if they don't understand this, that they I use a lot of animal analogies, and they should go to the zoo and they should look at the tigers and they should look at the gorillas and they should see just really how big these animals are and think, if you were really going to take a tiger for a walk, like, would you have a plan for that? It's really important because tigers are big, and I'm not sure if I would win against that tiger, and I don't want to roll the dice on that. And so having a plan is really important, and part of being willing to go to any length is having a plan and executing on that plan. And, you know, kind of recovery 2.0 for me is not just talking about abstinence or talking about the steps, but it is having all of the right tools to be successful. And oftentimes when I meet a newcomer and we talk about being successful, you know, I think part of 12-step services is going to somebody's house and kind of taking a look at the kitchen, right? Because the kitchen is kind of where the kitchen is where success happens, I think, for a compulsive overeater. And the first thing to do is really get rid of everything in that kitchen that isn't working, you know, and whether that's foods, whether that's dry goods, whether that's condiments, you know, if there are things that are not working, we just have to get rid of those. You know, the same way if I was going to a guy's house and, you know, he had whiskey all over the place or we got to get rid of that stuff and flush it down the toilet and throw it in the trash. You know, the second part is making sure that we have the right tools. You know, and for me, you know, a great example for me is just when I upgraded to a really nice knife, when I bought myself my first couple really nice knives, it was a game changer for me, and especially in terms of food prep and chopping fruits and vegetables and really helping to set myself up for success. So I am a believer in investing in yourself and investing in your abstinence. And part of investing in abstinence, you know, I believe is, you know, and being willing to go to any lengths is making a financial commitment in the tools in your kitchen, whether that's, you know, I have a couple of crock pots, I have good pans, you know, I have really nice containers that keep my food fresh and don't leak. You know, I have enough containers that if I wanted to make a month's worth of meals, I have more containers than I'm ever going to need, right? And so I have plenty to keep it on rotation, right? I can make food and I can freeze it, and sometimes I do that. Sometimes I'll make a couple weeks of food and I'll freeze a week just in case, you know, and just have a backup week just in case I don't get around to meal prepping on a weekend. You know, I can thaw stuff out. But I really do believe, you know, in having a plan. You know, I have the same breakfast pretty much every morning. You know, on the weekends, I cook it fresh because I have more time. And everything is for me interchangeable parts. Like when we're talking about, like, especially with lunches and dinners or breakfast, like, because, you know, all of our fruits, vegetables, and meats are interchangeable. So whether you wanted to do a salad or a soup or a crock pot or you want, like, everything can always be seasoned differently. Everything can always use, you can use black beans or red beans or, you know, broccoli or cauliflower or carrots. And I think what's really important is just like exercise, I think it's very important to do something that one likes to do. You know, I really don't like swimming. So I don't do swimming as my exercise. If someone does not like running, they should not run. If you don't like broccoli, please don't eat broccoli. That's not going to help you stay abstinent. You know, I think finding foods in that universe of everything else that one enjoys and putting things together from there is what's really helpful. And so I know for me that I always have a, I just always have a rotation. I always have a plan, and I'm happy to talk about that. And that's one thing I wish we talked about more is what meal prep is like. I typically do it on Sundays. I do it every Sunday or every other Sunday, depending on the quantities that I make. 80 to 90% of all of my meals are meals that I've made myself. I do occasionally go out. When I do go out to a restaurant, I always look at the menu first, and I know what I'm eating before I get there, and it just helps me, you know, because for me, looking at a restaurant menu can be like looking at pornography. It's too enticing, and I don't want to put it down, and it's just really good for me to know beforehand what I'm doing, and that really keeps it straight, and it's so important because when the food's not right, nothing is right. And that's what I've found for me. When the food is not right, nothing is right. My house is a mess. My head's a mess. My money's a mess. My communication with other people is a mess. My attitude's a mess. My relationships are a mess. And what's interesting is when the food is right, everything else in life just seems to fall into place. And that has been my experience. And I like it when things fall into place. And I do believe that abstinence is like the rising tide that raises all the boats for all of the areas in my life. I think that step 11 is really important. When I think about sort of recovery 2.0, I think really pressing on the prayer and meditation and the God piece and understanding who or what is God and what does that mean for my life? I think those intrinsic spiritual questions are very important for me to reflect on and think about and increase my connection with higher power. My natural state is to be eating chocolate chip cookies until I feel sick. Right? And it is not eating cookies is not of my making. And I really embrace humility about that. There's nothing I do when I am exercising or meal prepping or showing up to meetings or even getting out of bed to go to work on time. There's really nothing that I do that is of my making because I would sit in my sweatpants every day and do nothing if it wasn't the most insanely painful thing in the universe. We just finished the Christmas season. The Charles Dickens Christmas Carol is one of my favorite stories. And in that story is Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by three ghosts. And when I think about recovery, I always think about the ghost of Christmas future. And the ghost of Christmas future comes to Ebenezer Scrooge and he shows him what his life is going to be like. TLC has this reality TV show called My 600-Pound Life. I have that on my queue, and whenever I am feeling, what is my word, resistant to working my program, it's always good for me to throw on one of those episodes because that is the ghost of Christmas future. That is the ghost of Christmas future, and that is my life if I don't do these things one day at a time. And it's so critical for me to, I have my morning routine where I make my bed every day. I get on my knees. I say my prayer. My first prayer every morning is, "Dear God, please help me today to use food for its purpose." Then I say the third step prayer. Then I pray for people in my life. And try to ask God what his will for me is. I have a couple of daily readers on my bed table. I read those, and then I do a meditation. And then I get up and I go about the day. I schedule my exercise. I make sure I do that a few days a week. you know, I schedule my meal prep time, and I do it with friends, right? And I try to incorporate other people in my life, to cook with me and eat healthy with me, and that helps me do that. And so, you know, if anybody wants to talk about, abstinence, exercise, meal prep, containers, if anybody wants to take a trip to Target to go buy a crock pot, I'm happy to go with you. You know, I'm always interested in doing that type of stuff because I think it's really, really important. That's a wrap for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, John.